Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another amazing episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find all the information at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, there's been a lot of chatter recently here in the States with President Barry Satoru and, of course, Hillary and other folks wagging their finger and threatening Syria. Don't you dare use chemical weapons, because that would put them in the ranks of the handful of countries that have actually used chemical weapons. And this is a really interesting story from the BBC, and it's actually written from their world affairs editor at the BBC, so it's written in the first person. Halabja chemical weapons and a chance to find the men who armed Saddam. Nearly 25 years ago, Iraqi forces killed thousands of their own civilians using chemical weapons on the Kurdish town of Halabja. Now, steps are about to be taken to discover which country and even possibly which factory supplied some of the chemicals. The result of the chemical warfare attack in Halabja on March 16, 1988 was one of the worst sights I've ever seen. Everywhere there were huddled bodies lying in the street, sheltering against walls. There was no protection against the nerve agents and gases which Saddam Hussein's men had dropped indiscriminately on Halabja to teach its Kurdish inhabitants a lesson. And it goes into, again, more of the kind of on-the-ground sights and sounds that are quite gruesome. But we jump down, I think, to the relative or rather relevant part of this article that gets to the heart of the question. Once Halabja is clean, if you like, the ability to develop the place at a rate the rest of the country is going should be realized. This was said by Mr. DeBretton Gordon, and he also went on to say that it may be possible to identify who supplied Saddam Hussein's government with the basic chemicals used at Halabja. We expect to find samples of mustard gas in the mass graves as we have done in the cellars. And if we can break it down to its base molecule components, we'll be able to see what its signature is, and then we can match it against a sample. This, he believes, will make it possible to work out which country, even which factory, supplied the original chemicals for the mustard gas. It will not be possible to trace the source of the nerve agents. It's going to be difficult to get a test sample from the manufacturers who allegedly made this. If they handed it over and it matched, that's irrefutable evidence which the International Criminal Court and others would take a view on. James, this is a fascinating story, isn't it?
It is absolutely fascinating, and I hope that they are able to take these samples and find out about it, because it would certainly provide some more insight into this issue. But I think, I don't know if I'm getting this wrong or the person involved is, but it seems to me that the International Criminal Court does not have jurisdiction on anything that happened before the court was founded in 2002. So I don't think this is anything that even could theoretically be brought before the ICC. And even if they do discover that the signatures, for example, there's some indication that they may have come from West Germany, as is noted in this article, but it's also noted that West Germany had exempted itself from the international agreements forbidding the transfer of chemical weapons and their agents. So I'm not sure if there's even any juridical case to be made here against West Germany or whatever other nation turns out to be behind this. But it is interesting to see. We will follow the story and see if they do come up with some sort of answer to this. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure if it's going to have any judicial meaning. And if I seriously doubt that anyone will actually be brought before any courts about it. But you're very right to tie this in with Syria and now the latest hubbub and about the Syrian chemical weapons. And on that note, I did have a GRTV backgrounder earlier this year on that very subject when they were first bringing up this chemical weapons of Assad, which is obviously a good setup for a false flag to perhaps justify further intervention in Syria.
And we'll also provide some information, I think, too, it would be worthwhile to show perhaps who uses weapons such as white phosphorus rounds. James, our second story is quite the ongoing bizarre soap opera that has been going on for weeks and weeks now, and it's something I haven't followed closely. But of course, anytime I've seen headlines about it, you sort of look and you go, oh, that's weird. That's kind of almost like a movie, and it probably will be someday soon. Hacker finds McAfee through phone trail. Weeks of international intrigue about the whereabouts of tech millionaire John McAfee ended Tuesday after the internet pioneer made an elementary digital mistake that highlighted the fraught relationship Americans have with what they once quaintly called the telephone. That homely communications tool, wired into walls everywhere for the better part of a century, has now become an untethered emailer, browser, banker, shopper, movie viewer, music player, and, to an extent that few appreciate, digital spy of extraordinary power. McAfee, 67, who founded the popular antivirus company that bears his name, has been wanted for questioning by police in Belize since a neighbor turned up dead of a gunshot wound near McAfee's beachside home on November 11th, 11/11. The troubled tech savant, insisting that he had no role in the shooting, went on the run and has been taunting police by blog, Twitter, and even the occasional podcast. Authorities couldn't catch him, but a hacker called Simple Nomad learned McAfee's location shortly after journalists posted an image of him from his supposedly secret locale under the provocative headline, "We are with John McAfee right now, suckers." Embedded in that image, apparently taken by one of the journalists, was the sort of detailed data routinely collected by smartphone cameras and often transmitted along with images wherever they go, email, Facebook, online photo albums, and, as it turns out, to Vice Magazine's website. Long story short, they pinpointed McAfee in Guatemala in a villa south of the border with Belize. The hacker, Simple Nomad, tweeted the information, generating significant online buzz yesterday. McAfee tried to cover his tracks with a blog post in which he claimed to have faked the iPhone data to fool the police, but he came clean yesterday morning with another post acknowledging that he was indeed in Guatemala and that he would soon be meeting with a lawyer. James?
Well, I must also confess some ignorance about this story. I've been following it through the headlines like yourself, but I haven't really been following it carefully, so I'll have to get up to date. And I understand he's been on Rogan and some other programs and things, so I will catch up with that to see about this story. But this particular story that we're citing here, which I hope people will go and read, is interesting at any rate because it does get into some degree of detail about what the all the data that the smartphones are collecting on people, usually without them knowing. And it is particularly head-scratching that this Vice.com journalist would have tweeted that out, specifically because, I mean, even on an iPhone, it's not a very difficult process at all to turn off the GPS data so that it doesn't get sent out on your tweets, etc. But still, but regardless of whether or not you do that, it's still recording all that GPS data and secretly sending it back to Apple, as was discovered a couple of years ago. So there is definitely a lot of privacy debacle going on here. And on top of that, an interesting story about an eccentric millionaire on the run from the police. So this story has a little bit of everything. And I hope people will go and read this this original story to find out more about that. And people who are interested in privacy and how to turn off some of your settings and things on your iPhone, for what it's worth, I haven't done a specific episode on that yet, but I think I will in the future, just as part of an ongoing series of hoping to get people at least a little bit more armed with information about how to escape this this tracking net.
So, James, the text that I just went over actually comes from The Age out of Australia. We'll also include the Washington Post report on McAfee found through his phone trail. James, I think it's stories like these, I think, that are, in a way, are sort of bread and butter here on New World Next Week, because there are stories that sort of exist in the tabloid world. But if you take just a little bit of a deeper look, you can see, hey, this opens up, you know, the discussion that we can talk about, you know, digital privacy or lack thereof and all of those other things in a related way. It almost reminds me of when we had the big Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction. TiVo came out and said, wow, that was, you know, the most rewatched thing in our history, which then made people go, how do you know that? Oh, because you're tracking and holding and databasing every single thing everyone does. So a tabloid story on the surface can actually get it at the real dirt going on. And hopefully that's what we're good at doing here, James.
Absolutely. And that is actually a great point, because so many people do tune into these stories. But it is a way to open up that conversation, as you say.
So our third and final story this week, James, will be an update on a story, and I just dug back through the archives, and we'll mention right here, James, I don't know the exact date, but man, we're coming up on 3 years of doing New World next week. So again, we can look back in the archives and go, oh, we did cover this story, and now we can do an update on it. So we covered this story, James, back on July 1st, 2010, where genetically modified salmon was set to move closer to your table. However, now the biotech company behind the Frankenfish faces uncertain future amid ongoing review. A Massachusetts biotech firm that was poised to become the first company to sell a genetically modified fish says it may run out of money before regulators approve its fast-growing salmon. Aqua Bounty, that's the company, that's the biotech company. Aqua Bounty's Atlantic salmon contains an extra hormone that makes it grow makes it to grow twice as fast as a traditional salmon. Despite concerns from environmentalists, regulators said in 2010 that the fish appeared safe to eat. That's so reassuring. Yeah, it looks okay. The FDA says it is still working to complete its review of Aqua Bounty's salmon. Company executives say they only have enough money to operate the company until January. Jay.
Well, this is good news of a sort, I suppose. I mean, I'll take this kind of victory any way we can get it. And if this company goes out of business, aw, shucks, too bad for them. Although I would prefer if it was a straight-out victory against the GM mongers, because if the public had a chance to vote on it with their dollars and overwhelmingly rejected it so that they went out of business, I think that would be a more damning blow, because all this does is leave the door open for another company with bigger, deeper pockets to come along and do the same thing and get through this regulatory process, which is bought and paid for behind the scenes, as we know, by the Monsanto executives who populate the FDA. So again, it's not exactly a happy story, but at the very least, if it prolongs it for a little bit more, I guess that buys us a little bit more time to educate people about why GM foods are something to be avoided, and we have to continue this fight against them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll include the extra information on this story, as with all the other stories. And again, I always have to implore each week, we'll provide all the links, all the documentation, all the sources that we cite and mention on these shows, and they'll be embedded in the show notes. And again, it's up to you to go check out this information for yourself. And again, use the comment form for something productive, like adding to the story and saying, ah, here's the extra part of the story. And that's, again, how this all has to work, James. If you use the cave analogy, we've got to kind of come back to the cave and help report to the other people, like, hey, here's the real story. Here's what's going on.
Exactly right. And speaking of what's going on, what's happening on Ground Zero this week?
At Ground Zero this week, of course, once we turned into December, we are, of course, kind of focusing on the approaching date of December 21st, 2012, but I think not in the way of, oh my God, Y2K, we're all going to die, everything's going to go crazy. I think we're trying to really look and analyze just a lot of the sort of synchronicities and the philosophies, kind of the viral philosophies, we've called them, surrounding this approaching date of 2012. And we've recently, I think I mentioned last week, we had Freeman on the show. We had a documentary filmmaker the other night named Sean Paul, who has a documentary about 2012 that features Clyde Lewis of Ground Zero and Jordan Maxwell and all kinds of other folks. And even last night, we had a guy who I learned about through the Korber Report. That's Alan Abadesa-Green of thesyncbook.com. And he was on, and we discussed Terence McKenna's Time Wave Zero and synchronicities in the tarot and the royals and all sorts of things. It was a really fascinating episode. And I think so many more interesting things coming up on Ground Zero. And I enjoy, hopefully, kind of adding the media monarchy feel to the show, Ground Zero.
Excellent to hear, and I hear that you are doing quite well in a number of markets. So congratulations to you and Clyde, and good luck with what you're doing there.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I think I've always kind of explained, it's like, man, imagine if something like, you know, Red Ice Radio was on your terrestrial radio dial. I feel like if you were out there on the road scrolling through the radio dial, there's nothing even comes close. I think if you were scrolling through the dial and you heard our show, you're going to stop and go, what is this? I can't believe they're finally somebody's talking about this stuff on the air. So yeah, hopefully folks will check out the show at groundzero.fm.
All right, excellent. Well, assuming that we're here next week and the week after and the week after that, assuming the world doesn't end, we'll be back with New World next week. So thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.